We're excited to announce that our very own podcasting platform, Zencastr, has become a new sponsor to the show. Check out the podcast discount link in our show notes and stay tuned for why we love using Zen for the podcast.
You're listening to the Archaeology Podcast Network.
This is the CRM Archaeology Podcast. It's the show where we pull back the veil of cultural resources management archaeology and discuss the issues that everyone is concerned about. Welcome to the podcast. Hello and welcome to the CRM Archaeology Podcast, episode 169 for July 31st, 2019. I'm your host, Chris Webster. On today's show, we talk to an Australian-trained CRM archaeologist working in Washington State who also drives for Uber on the side. So check your driving record because the CRM Archaeology Podcast starts right now. All right, welcome to the show, everyone. It's just me today, unless somebody else comes in. So, you know, we'll see how that goes. We'll just bring them in if they do. But I've got a guest on today. We don't have too many guests on the CRM Archaeology Podcast, but our guest today is Paul Howard. Paul, how's it going?
G'day. How you going, Chris?
Good, good. So we're going to talk about your background in archaeology because the nickel tour is you were born and raised in Australia, trained as an archaeologist in Australia. Now you're in the United States.
That's right.
Basically. All right. So let's get into that a little bit. Tell us about where you went to school in Australia. Cause we've interviewed a few people from Australia before and it seems kind of, I guess, variable on the amount of training, just like over here in the United States on the kind of archaeological education you can get. You know, was it focused on cultural resource management? Was it focused on just, you know, basic archaeology degree or what was that like?
Okay, so essentially, first thing you learn over there is in archaeology, but there are public archaeology components attached to the degree. I went to the University of New England, which is in Armidale, New South Wales, and it was mainly Aboriginal archaeology that was the main focus, or Indigenous archaeology. Mm-hmm. However, there were other aspects thrown in there as well, like Pam Watson taught us about Pella and her exploits in Jordan, and I had a couple of rock art analysis courses from June Ross, Mike Morwood, and Mark Moore, who is an American, by the way. Nice. So he actually taught me lithics analysis, and I did a lot. I did 3 years full time, then I did another year of which is a graduate certificate. I didn't have to do that, but I wanted the marks to get into an honors degree, which I needed at the time. And so I went back and did some more study. And then I ended up going to the University of Wollongong in New South Wales, which is south of Sydney. And I did my honors year there. So in Australia, what you have to do, you have to have an honors year, which is, I guess, your fourth year where you do a thesis. And then you're good to go in archaeology. It's good to have prior experience as well. So some sort of volunteer work helps. So a master's is not necessary, but I went ahead and did one later, which I found out was very important in the United States.
Can be, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, what led you to cultural resource management? Was that over in Australia or did you do that when you came over to the United States?
Funny story, actually. Once I'd finished my honors degree, a friend of mine contacted me and said, "Oh, I heard you finished your degree." And I said, "Yeah." He said, "This is about one month out of graduating at Wollongong there." Mm-hmm. And he said, "Oh, do you want to work for the Australian Museum Business Services and do an excavation with them?" And I said, "Yeah, sure." So I went to the Hunter Valley and did my very first project with a guy by the name of Chris Ludlucky, which, he was the field director at the time. And we were replacing power poles in New South Wales there. And that was what got me into archaeology straight away off the bat for CRM. So I had prior experience at university level. I went to Cambodia with the Greater Angkor Project at the University of Sydney there, and had that prior experience. And throughout my university, I managed to get field experience working on an old sawmill site, and I do volunteer work when necessary. I did some volunteer work with the Sydney Harbour Foreshore Authority in Sydney there, and the senior director there, Dr. Wayne Johnson, took me under his wing, and I helped him out with some field work and some cataloguing and scanning. I actually helped open the Rocks Discovery Museum in Sydney. I cleaned and put together some of the displays down in at the Sydney Harbour Foreshore Authority Rocks Discovery Museum. And yeah, that was an excellent time. And Wayne actually said, "Oh, do you want to come to Cambodia?" And I said, "Sure." that got me into archaeology per se after university, and without having certain people along the way, I probably wouldn't have been able to get to where I am. So,
I mean, that is that's always true, isn't it? It's a lot about who you know and taking those opportunities when they come your way. So that's really cool.
Absolutely. And So back to the other question, you were saying that what got me into that, the CRM aspect just kept going from there. I never looked back. So after that couple of weeks of working at the Australian Museum Business Services, I did more contract work in and around New South Wales. And been doing it for about 10 years now.
Wow. Yeah. How did you end up in the United States? Kind of a big departure from Australia.
Well, actually, it's a bit of a strange story. My now wife, she was an archaeologist. Now she's a land surveyor, and she is from the United States, mm-hmm. Tacoma originally, and she worked in Australia as an archaeologist for about 2 years, and she did CRM work there, but the connection was LinkedIn. I was going to work with a guy over in a place called Campbelltown, which is part of Sydney there. I didn't take the job because I got a better offer in Victoria, in Melbourne there, at Australian Cultural Heritage Management. And it was only by chance on LinkedIn I saw this particular nice looking lady that had worked for this organization that I was going to work for, and we started chatting and building up some sort of communication basis there about should I have worked for the guy or not, and she ended up coming back to the United States, and I'd gone through a pretty messy breakup back in 2014, I was interested in, I didn't have anything to lose kind of thing. So we started chatting more on LinkedIn there. I ended up finding myself in San Diego and the rest is history. Now we're married.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
There you go. Did you find it hard to get archaeology jobs when you got back here to the States?
Yes. Or, absolutely.
Was that because you were from Australia and had experience over there, or just because finding jobs over here is difficult?
Maybe a bit of both, to be honest, because in San Diego, you kind of have to prove yourself, and really have to – that is who you know, but they also say you need to have 6 to 12 months of experience to do any sort of archaeology work there. But it had to be San Diego approved or county approved. So the very first stages of our relationship was, going back and forth. And, so I was working in Australia doing my master's, but then I was going out to the Cooper Base and doing work out there with the Yandawanda Yarrawaka people. And then I'd fly back and see her for a couple of weeks or, in a month or something, then go back. And in amongst all this, I'm trying to find work in San Diego. And I've been doing this for about a year before I'd actually found any sort of work. And it was actually quite tough compared to Australia, where, 1 month out of university, I would just walk into a job. I ended up talking with as many companies as possible. I've had 7 years of experience at the time, and I ended up talking with the San Diego Archaeological Center. The lady there, the director, Cindy Stankowski, she said, "Oh, well, maybe you could do some volunteer work and get your foot in the door over here. And I was like, yeah, why not? You know, going back to square one, doing volunteer work, whatever. Let's give it a crack, you know. And so I did that for a couple of months, you know, just helping cataloging artifact and doing data entry and whatnot. And then eventually there was a few companies that were interested in me, but they wouldn't sponsor me because I'm foreign. And, you know, everyone's scared of the paperwork, even though they didn't even have to pay for the paperwork. It was all me that had to pay for it. It was literally filling out a few forms and then off you go. But just people just didn't want to deal with the, you know, they don't want to handle the paperwork like that. They're scared of it, I guess, when it comes to immigration and whatnot. And I understand that because you don't know what you're getting yourself into. Yes, this person's got this amount of experience, but you know, what are they capable of? Do they even know what an artifact is? You know,
I mean, you get that when you hire people who are from the United States.
That's true. That's true. And anyway, but she ended up sponsoring me because, you know, no one would sponsor me. So, and we ended up having an agreement where I could subcontract to other companies. So I ended up working for Tierra Environmental, subcontracting to them, and then PanGIS, and then Spindrift Archaeological Consulting. And, and then I ended up taking another role later on down the line up here in Blaine, Washington. Mm-hmm. And which unfortunately I lost my job about a month ago, but that's another story. I've started working for another company as of this week called Caldera Archaeology. So I'll see how that goes.
Okay.
But in the meantime, I was Ubering.
Well, yeah. Well, there you go. Well, we're going to get into that. I want to keep talking about CRM a little bit, though. Now that you have some experience in the U.S. and you've actually got some, you know, some local experience where you're at now, Paul, I'm wondering, do you have full U.S. citizenship yet, or does that matter now that you're married to a U.S. citizen? Basically, do companies still have to sponsor you now that you're married? I'm not really sure how all that works, and I think some of our listeners who are maybe in similar situations would be interested in how you're doing it these days.
All right, so I don't have any citizenship at all. I'm in the process of waiting for a green card. Mm-hmm. And so, as I said before, prior to that, I had sponsorship. I had what was called an E3 visa. And when you get married to someone, you can change your status. And whilst you're waiting for that, your green card, you get to what's called an employment authorization document, which enables you to do anything. You can work for anyone, whoever. You don't have to have any sort of sponsorship, thank goodness. So that's made things a little bit easier for me, that's for sure. But yeah, so it automatically, if you marry an American, it doesn't make you a citizen at all. I think you've got to wait up to 5 years until you've once you've got your green cards. When you get your green card, you know, I think you wait 5 years and then you can go for citizenship. So,
okay. Yeah. Okay. So they could still theoretically send you back to Australia.
Yeah. Yeah. They could deport me tomorrow if they want to.
Wow. I guess you better vote Republican in the next election. Don't piss them off.
Don't get me started.
No, right? at least you're in a blue state now. I don't know about Blaine, Washington, but, you know, there you go. All right. So we've talked about that. So now that you're up in, what led you guys back up to Blaine, Washington? And for those that don't know where Blaine is, it's practically in Canada. I mean, it's really close to the Canadian border. I used to live in south of there in that area. That's where I grew up and was born and raised. So I've got a lot of familiarity up there, but it's a really, I mean, kind of a remote area. What led you guys to be up there? Presumably you're closer to your wife's family if she was raised in Tacoma, but what led to Blaine?
That was one of the reasons, but the main reason was I took a senior archaeology role at in Blaine, Washington. Ah. I was doing that for about a year, and because apparently the guy was pretty swamped, he was pretty busy taking doing CRM projects in and around the area. Yeah, it could be from anywhere, anyone building a house or putting in power lines or power poles or roads, you name it, anything. That was the main reason. Okay. I thought it would be a more secure position because it was a senior role, but hindsight's a beautiful thing.
There you go. So, well, as we frequently talk about on the show, no matter what your position is in archaeology, whether you're salaried and been there for 10 years or you've got a high level position, your work is dependent on many factors and you could be out of a job tomorrow.
Exactly. Yeah. So. No, that's very true.
All right. Well, let's end this segment now. And when we come back, we'll talk about your side hustle and what you're doing to, you know, make ends meet like everybody else is and how that's going for you. So we'll be back in just a second, continue this discussion with Paul Howard.
Chris Webster here for the Archaeology Podcast Network. We strive for high quality interviews and content so you can find information on any topic in archaeology from around the world. One way we do that is by recording interviews with our hosts and guests located in many parts of the world all at once. We do that through the use of Zencastr. That's Zencastr. Zencastr allows us to record high quality audio with no stress on the guest. Just send them a link to click on and that's it. Zencastr does the rest. They even do automatic transcriptions. Check out the link in the show notes for 30% off your first 3 months or go to zencastr.com and use the code CRMARC. Looking to expand your knowledge of x-rays and imaging in the archaeology field? Then check out An Introduction to Paleoradiography, a short online course offering professional training for archaeologists and affiliated disciplines. Created by archaeologist, radiographer, and lecturer James Elliott, the content of this course is based upon his research and teaching experience in higher education. It is approved by the Chartered Institute for Archaeologists as 4 hours of training. That's in the UK, for those of you that don't know. So don't miss out on this exciting opportunity for professional and personal development. For more information on price and course structure, visit paleoimaging.com. That's P-A-L-E-O imaging.com. And look for the link in the show notes to this episode.
All right, we are back on the CRM Archaeology Podcast, episode 169, and I am talking with archaeologist Paul Howard. And just a quick debrief here, Paul was born and raised in Australia, learned to do archaeology over there, got his master's degree over there, then moved over here to the United States, is married to a U.S. citizen, also a former archaeologist, and is now working in Blaine, Washington. So, Paul, we often talk about on this podcast how people really need a side hustle to make ends meet sometimes, and I think we all have one or have had one at various times. For example, there's a lot of people that work in the Great Basin that do something else over the wintertime because you simply can't do archaeology in the wintertime in the Great Basin in the United States because there's snow covering the ground. So you either move to a different region in the United States to do archaeology, and then that's where everybody else went, so the jobs are scarce, or you find something else to do. I know people that are ski instructors, snowplow drivers, tax accountants during the tax season. I know somebody who did taxes from like January to April and then was an archaeologist the rest of the year. And and people find whatever they can do to fill in that off time. But I think one of the best things that you can do is something where you can just pick up the work on your own time and your own schedule. And one of those things is driving, and specifically Lyft and Uber. So what led you to look at Uber driving, or did you try other stuff before you got to there? Or did you just think, hey, this seems where it's at? How'd that work?
Well, I had a former colleague at Drayton Archaeology in Blaine here, and he was telling me about Uber and how he uses it as a side hustle and tells me his exploits in Seattle specifically. And I found it really intriguing. I thought, you know, you clock in whenever you want and you can accept people if you want or not, you know, and work your own hours. And I thought that was really interesting. And it's easy. You don't need another skill. If you can drive as an archaeologist, you can drive passengers and other people around. So I looked at how old my car was and went for that. filled out all the paperwork that was required. And I think it only took maybe a week, I think. And I experimented one day and then I got a ping automatically and thought, oh, hang on, I'm not ready. I need to clean my car and, you know, set it all up because, you know, I don't want people in my car just yet. But I was seeing if it worked, and all of a sudden this guy called Aaron pinged me immediately. And I was like, oh, no, I'm not ready.
Nice.
Yeah. So my area that I work is in Bellingham, which is about 25 minutes from Blaine, Washington. So, it's fascinating. It's like I said, it's easy. anyone can drive anyone around. You can hold a conversation with someone if you want, or you could just not talk to them at all. But 9 times out of 10, I'm talking someone's ear off. It's it's interesting.
Now, I've heard so you were working with this other company as an archaeologist, and now you've just accepted another position as an archaeologist. Mm-hmm. I've heard tales that unless you're really working full-time Uber, some of the expenses and the cut that they take and, you know, the insurance you have to maintain and things like that, that it makes it so it's almost not worth it to drive for Uber. Is there a threshold at which you need to put in, you know, so many drives or so many, it's not really hours, I guess it's so many drives, so many people that you haul around. Is there like a threshold where you're like, man, I need to get over this to make it worth it for the week or for the month or something like that?
Absolutely. So yeah. I try and, if I have no archaeology work on at all, I'll look at my daily schedule and go, okay, what am I doing? How can I make money? Am I even going to make this amount of money? So you can aim for maybe $100 a day or more. Mm-hmm. But when you get to the weekends, that's your bread and butter, because that's when you're going to make your most money, because 9 times out of 10, you're going to have drunk people, which are can be a pain, but at the same time, very entertaining, but they're the ones that are going to pay your bills. Like the other night, I think I only worked for 6 hours and got $200.
Nice.
One day I picked, I think it was the second Saturday I was doing it, I picked up one guy that wanted to go to Pittsburgh, California.
Wow.
And that was the most incredible thing that I ever thought I'd say. Okay, get in my car. I didn't expect that at all, but I'm calling it the golden unicorn, because I've spoken to another Uber driver since I've started, and he said, "Have you had any unicorns yet?" And I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "Oh, well, I drove a guy to Renton, Washington." And I said, "Oh, I drove a guy to Pittsburgh, California."
Jeez.
And the cool thing is that you can, if you want to make an extra, amount of money, you can do cash in hand if you want. That's entirely up to you. You can say, Uber's going to do it this way, but I can do it this way if you want. But
sure.
I don't do that very often, because, you know, I want to keep Ubering if I can. So
yeah, because I imagine that's not encouraged by Uber to go outside their system.
No, that's right. But you know, if in that case, the guy was pretty desperate. He didn't have any money on his card. He didn't have any identification.
Oh wow.
His friend got detained at the border here, because they went up to film a music video at Peace Arch, and his friend didn't have any immigration papers on him, and Border Patrol caught up with him and handcuffed him and detained him. And I was a little bit shocked. He showed me the whole video and of him getting handcuffed, and I thought, that hits a little bit close to home, because I'm a foreigner. I haven't been handcuffed or tased or anything like that. But, you know, I sat there and thought, well, geez. And he said, I only have this amount of money. I can pay you the rest when I get there. And I thought, heck, get in my car. You know, obviously I had to make a phone call to see if I had permission to go down there. But, you know, that turned into a $700 trip.
Wow. Wow. And, and does that include, I mean, did he pay for gas as well? Or does your gas money come out of that $700?
Yeah, it came out of that. But, you know, what I thought about was I'd already made something like $300 that week, so
So you're anything out of top.
Else, yeah, I was it just topped it off, and yeah, it was one heck of an experience, that's for sure.
So are you also driving for Lyft?
No, I thought about doing that, but you do have to pay for a business license for that one, whereas Uber, you just sign up and off you go, and which I found easier. I don't want to get a business license until I am comfortable getting one, if that makes sense.
Indeed. So with Uber, you don't need a business license, but with Lyft, you do?
That's right. Yeah.
Wow, I didn't know that, actually. That's interesting.
Mm. Okay. I don't know if that's city-specific or county-specific. I haven't really looked into that. But I know for Whatcom County or Bellingham sort of area, you need a business license for that. It's only $60. Mm. And yes, I could do that. And I spoke to another driver the other day saying that, yeah, he actually thinks Lyft is better because, you know, you get more money out of it. And, you know, they have better surge rates. So once it gets like 2 a.m., you might be getting double instead of like $2, $2 extra.
Yeah.
So, which is what's with Uber right now. So, yeah,
indeed. Hmm. Well, what about other side hustles? Are you pretty happy with Uber, or is there other stuff that you are looking at? I know some people have like passion projects and things that might help them make them a little money on the side. Is there anything else you've thought about doing, or are you going to stick with Uber for a while?
I'm going to stick with Uber for a while because I've been posting regular notes about my experiences Ubering. I've actually started a blog and like a couple of days ago. I need to figure it all out on WordPress there. I've posted every single day up until this point, and but they're all in weird order. I need to figure out, you know, how to put day one first and day two. But for some reason, day 17's first, and it's all discombobulated, which is a pain, but I'll figure that out. But someone was telling me the other day, you know, there's a guy in New York City that has a YouTube channel, and he gets $10,000 a month just by recording his own people that set foot in his car.
Wow.
I sat there and thought, well, I don't know if I want to do that, but I'm quite interested in maybe, you know, publishing my works in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah, I mean, a blog is a really good place to start. You know, if you're decent enough at writing and you can, and you have a master's degree, so you must have some writing experience. And and that's, I think it's making it entertaining as well, you know, obviously because you're writing about people and their,
classic example. I mean, obviously that guy to California, but I had another guy that looked and sounded like Jeff Goldblum, and I had to do a double take. He was the first guy that set foot in my car, and I thought, oh, this is going to be great. His name was Shane, though, but you know,
that's what he told you.
Yeah, that's right.
He's not going to get in the car and say, "I'm Jeff Goldblum."
Yeah, that's right. It's his, you know, alter ego or something.
That's right. He's probably working on a character.
Hey, it's possible, I guess.
Man, wouldn't that be weird. Funny if you see a movie later on with Jeff Goldblum and his name is Shane in the movie? That would be awesome. Yeah.
I have to keep a sharp eye out for that one.
That'd be great. So what's this new job? Do you have details on how that's going to impact your Uber driving, or do you just spend a lot of time in your off time? I mean, obviously the best time to be an Uber driver is at night and on the weekends when people are out partying and they're, you know, paying all the money.
Well, to be honest, the last few months of archaeology before I lost my job were really stressful for me.
Yeah.
There was a lot of responsibility, obviously, attached to a senior role. And, you know, there was a lot of other aspects going on in my life, which I found very, very difficult. So Ubering, I've taken that over archaeology more so. I did a one day of work last week, which was my first day working for them. And, it was a struggle. compared to driving someone around, I was thinking maybe Uber's actually worth more to me right now than archaeology. Isn't that a shame? Because, you know, you go, I did 4 years and then another 2 years of study, just to get where I am now at a senior level. And, obviously attached to that is my 10 years of experience. And I'd rather be Uber driving because it's less stress and less complications, isn't it? Isn't that strange?
Here's the thing. I totally buy that because we don't live in a world anymore where somebody gets an education out of high school, at least here in the United States. You get an education out of high school and then they go work for, you know, Ford for the next 45 years and then retire, right? I mean, we just don't live in that world. So I think especially with something like Uber driving, I mean, your experiences, your education, your world travels, you know, the places you've lived, all the things you've done, make you an interesting Uber driver. So
yeah, well, that's true. As soon as I dropped that I'm an archaeologist by trade, people turn around and say, wait, what? And I've had people comment on my, if they give me 5-star rating or something like that, then I'll have great conversation listed and say, enjoyed listening about your archaeology exploits over the years. And
I mean, they're just being nice. Let's be honest. The minute you open your mouth and your Australian accent comes out,
oh, yeah.
especially if it's a woman, you're getting a 5-star rating.
Oh my gosh. You have no idea. You really don't. But maybe you kind of do. It's kind of ridiculous.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not going to delve into the depths of that one, but yeah, maybe you could read my blog about that.
Save it for the blog.
Yeah. But
gosh. As far as you could have another side hustle related to this, and unless Uber becomes your front hustle, then this could be your side hustle. But look into a Patreon account, because you could have your blog where you've got your stories, your different ride stories and things and interesting stuff like that. But then there's like the maybe more explicit stories, or the maybe the more racy stories you get from riding Uber, and then that can be on your Patreon account, and people pay monthly to have access to your Patreon account. So then they could I've advised people to do this before. Oh, okay. Where if you've got good content, if you have say your average content, and then you've got your really special content, your different content, you put that on a Patreon account, and it's kind of like bonus content, or it's just extra stuff that if people want, say, your Uber After Dark stories, then they can go to Patreon and pay $5 a month or something like that, and get access to those extra stories. So something to look into.
That sounds like a good opportunity as well. But I did notice something as well in this country is that the wages are significantly lower to Australia's wages. And so having a side hustle makes more sense, because it's...
Yeah.
It does end up helping you pay for bills and whatnot. And in Australia, I think I was getting double what I was getting over here. And I could live quite comfortably over here. I've found it a real grind and a struggle, which is surprising for, it's something that's part of the regulatory requirements where, you go see a bio in the field and they're getting double what you're getting. You're thinking, well, I've had probably more education than what you've had over the years. It's not that I'm saying that biology and archaeology are the same thing by any chance, but by any means, but it's a kick in the guts where, someone at Fred Meyer or Haggins or any one of those grocery stores is getting $40 an hour for dealing with meat,
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's absurd. And up in Washington, you're in an area where it's even a little bit better pay. I did one job in Washington.
Yeah.
And I think I got $25 an hour, which was probably $8-$9 an hour more than I'd ever gotten anywhere else in the country. And I've worked in 18 different states. So, now that was 10 years ago. And I think there are some California wages that are around there a little higher typically. But
yeah, San Diego is pretty good in regards to wages, but the standard living is extremely high.
So. Right. Totally. Well, I will tell you one thing, man, as we're nearing the end of the segment here, and this goes to anybody thinking about doing this. You should do what makes you happy in life and what helps you pay the bills and what keeps you going. And one thing, especially about, I love the fact that you're writing a blog about your Uber driving experiences, because that's taking what you're doing and bringing that out to the rest of the people. Because I think one thing we do in archaeology is people think it's all excavation. They think it's all research, but what we're doing is telling stories.
Absolutely.
And when we find things and then we write about the things, we're telling the story of the objects and the objects' relation to the land and the people that lived there. And I think you're doing the exact same thing with your blog from Uber driving. You're telling people's stories. Maybe they don't want you telling those stories and you got to change your names. But either way.
Oh, don't worry. I've changed names.
But either way, you're telling real stories about real humanity. And that's the kind of thing that frankly we need more of. So I think that's you're still, you might not be doing archaeology, but you're definitely doing anthropology.
I was going to say it's like an anthropological study at its best. It's fascinating. And like I said, as soon as they figure out you're Australian and an archaeologist, it's hilarious. In fact, one night I put a few Australian classics playing in the car and just subtly in the background. And I don't know if anyone noticed, but I think it was a hit.
Nice. All right. Well, I think we're going to end it here. I just got one last question. So with this new job coming up, do you think you're going to try to stick this out a little bit full term, or what are your thoughts on, you know, maybe just saying, I'm going to commit to Uber?
Well, I'm going to see how it goes. That's for sure. I am in the process of also interviewing for another totally different role, which is they train you on the job. It's financial advisor at Edward Jones. So that's I really don't know if that's what I want to get into, but I'm exploring other options because archaeology has been good to me over the years. But yeah, 10 years of it and my stress levels, I don't know if I can keep doing it. But, you know, it was nice to get back out in the field the other day, and I was in the middle of a cornfield. That was interesting. Felt like something out of the movie Signs. I don't know if you've seen that one. But
I always go back a little farther to Children of the Corn from the 80s whenever I'm in a cornfield.
Yeah, there you go.
It was terrifying.
I'll have to watch that because I haven't actually seen it, but I've heard stories.
Yeah, it's bad.
Sure. But I'm going to stick with Ubering for the moment until I find something a little bit more stable and comfortable. But, you know, I'm still waiting for a few other roles to get back to me in regards to archaeology as well. So we'll see what happens, I guess.
Well, in the meantime, I would put your Uber driving on your CV as your cultural anthropology experience.
Yeah, and, definitely. Yeah. Actually.
Hey, if you were just driving, that'd be one thing. But driving combined with writing about it, it really is a whole different deal. You know, so I embrace that.
Well, it was only by chance too that when I had one Facebook post, a lot of friends and family turned around and said, "You need to start like keeping a daily log." And I thought, well, you know what, that does keep you in touch with archaeology because you're making notes every time when you're in the field. You document everything from artifacts to the conditions of the weather to the landscape to any abnormalities in the soil. It's just you know, and you do get some abnormal people in your car. So it's
indeed. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, all right, man. Well, thanks a lot. And thanks for coming on the show. And I wish you, good luck. And whether you do archaeology or cultural anthropology, you know.
Yeah. Thanks, Bruce.
Just keep it going.
You may have heard my pitch for membership. It's a great idea and really helps out. However, you can also support us by picking up a fun t-shirt, sticker, or something from a large selection of items from our Tee Public store. Head over to arcpodnet.com/shop for a link. That's arcpodnet.com/shop to pick up some fun swag and support the show.
Hey, everybody. I just wanted to reiterate what I was saying at the end of that interview with Paul Howard. If you want to do archaeology, that's great. If you love archaeology, that's great. But don't be discouraged by doing something else and try to see if you can take that archaeological training and experience like Paul has and convert it into something that makes you a great conversationalist, that brightens up somebody's day. Paul's taking it a step further and doing a blog about his experiences. And I hope he can monetize that for one more tiny little side hustle, because I always see the finances, as it was described to me one time, as a financial stool. And each leg of that stool has, you know, different widths depending on how much money it's bringing in, but they all contribute to your well-being and helping you pay the bills and your livelihood. So there's no reason you can't do archaeology. Keep that going, but also pick up something like Uber or Lyft on the side, or both, which they're really great because you can do those on your own time, on your own schedule. You just got to clean up that car at the end of the field season and keep it going and go from there. So again, thank you to Paul Howard for coming on the show. And I hope he finds a lot of success with this new company. But also, if he doesn't want to work for that new company, that's fine too. You know, he's having a good time driving for Uber. And some people see that as, I don't know, kind of a sellout, I've heard before, but I don't buy it. If it gives you enjoyment and you're bringing joy to somebody else and you're helping somebody else, well, that's a worthy cause and it's a worthy thing to do and it has good value. So, all right, thanks a lot and we'll see you next week. That's it for another episode of the CRM Archaeology Podcast. Links to some of the items mentioned on the show are in the show notes for this podcast, which can be found at www.arcpodnet.com/CRM Arc Podcast. Please comment and share anywhere you see the show. If you'd like us to answer a question on a future episode, email us. Use the contact form on the website or just email chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com. Support the show and the network at arcpodnet.com/members. Get some swag and extra content while you're there. Send us show suggestions and interview suggestions. We want this to be a resource for field technicians everywhere, and we want to know what you want to know about. Thanks to everyone for joining me this week. Thanks also to the listeners for tuning in, and we'll see you in the field. Goodbye. This show is produced and recorded by the Archaeology Podcast Network, Chris Webster and Tristan Boyle, in Reno, Nevada, at the Reno Collective.
This has been a presentation of the Archaeology Podcast Network. Visit us on the web for show notes and other podcasts at www.archpodnet.com. Contact us at chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com.
Thanks again for listening to this episode and for supporting the Archaeology Podcast Network. If you want these shows to keep going, consider becoming a member for just $7.99 a month. That's cheaper than a venti quad eggnog latte. Go to arcpodnet.com/members for more info.